I don't want to grow up. Mama, Toys R Us kid.
There's a million toys of Toys R Us that I can play with.
I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
They've got the best for so much that you really flip your legs.
From bike to train to the video game, it is the biggest toy store there is. He wins.
I don't want to grow up. The baby is my dear.
I'm a little indie, a Toys R Us kid.
More dogs, more toys, oh boy.
I want to be a Toys R Us kid.
There are several signs of becoming an adult. The physical signs, body hair, properly sized genitalia, relatively normal height, were very evident on every part of Tommy's body. But there's also the mental-emotional signs. Having a full-time job, ability to form 5 or 6 consecutive sentences without using the word like, and emancipating yourself from your parents' house. These were things that Tommy was not up for yet. Shit, these were things that I, like, wasn't ready for yet, and I was 21 to Tommy's 17, and here I was, living in my mother's condo, working at an Australian-themed steakhouse, and totally, like, not doing anything with my life. My solution to the non-grown-up-ness problem was to resume taking college classes. I enrolled at UMass Cranberry Lake and began taking classes that would surely help me get a degree, and no good job can come of this. I signed up for UMCL's infamous psychology course, where every morning a moo-mooed former psychiatrist would greet every class member by name and compliment them on their hair, their clothes, their smile, their posture, whatever she could think of. Every morning I heard, "Good morning, Adam. I like your shirt." I was 11 shirt days in when I dropped the class. The only other class I could take that didn't interfere with my Australian steak delivering was acting, a class that was so educational I took it 3 consecutive semesters. The first semester, my classmates were mostly British au pairs. Apart from Tommy, Saint, and the people at Kookaburra Canyon, I'd pretty much stopped talking to all of my friends during the Elvis invasion. After our third class, I was sitting in my car debating whether or not I should try and get closer to the British au pairs when I backed into a car being driven by one of them.
"If you really wanted to get my phone number, all you had to do was ask," Buffy said.
"Yeah, but this way I can get your phone number and your insurance information without seeming too needy." And for the next 4 months, I was tight with all the foreign child caretakers on Cape Cod, even hosting terrible parties with entirely too much noise and alcohol to fit in my tiny condo.
"How come you never invite me to any of these parties?"
Tommy asked during a particularly pensive afterglow. Because I don't want to go to jail?
"For fucking a 17-year-old?
"No, it's perfectly legal for me to fuck you, I just can't give you beer." Never mind that he'd been smoking pot in my condo since the first day we met. The subject was dropped, and our relationship shortly followed. The last weekend before Buffy was being exiled back to her life in Suffolk, I held a huge party and invited every non-Tommy that I knew. All the au pairs, all my fellow waitstaff, everyone in my acting classes, everyone I worked with at Camp Davis during the summer, the guys at the CD store I most often frequented, and Saint. Buffy had invited a group of Irish guys she'd met that day. They all showed up in a cab and D-clown card in front of my house. 17. 17 Irish guys in one cab. One for every year Tommy'd been alive. One of the au pairs was a somewhat obese, bald, 23-year-old guy named Scott. I hate Scots. This particular Scott had been making the moves on Buffy since he'd arrived in the States a month earlier. He dressed all in black and liked to play with tarot cards and Ouija boards in his alarmingly spare time. On the night of the party, he'd shown up with Buffy wearing black jeans, an X-Files t-shirt, and a beret.
"Do you have a tarot deck?"
he asked in a seemingly fake British accent. "No."
"Cards?"
"I've got playing cards."
"Excellent. Could I have them, please?"
He shuffled them around a few times and began giving readings to anyone at the party who accidentally made eye contact with him. When it was Buffy's turn, he began making a lot of faces at the deck and emitting the occasional, "Hmm," and
"That's interesting."
"What?" Buffy asked. Her accent was always accentuating when Scott was around.
"You've already met your true love."
"Really?"
He poked a couple of the cards with his fingers.
Is it Adam?
She asked. I rolled my eyes.
No, it's someone older, someone close to you, but not like totally close. He's pretty big, dark hair, and...
And he's wearing an X-Files t-shirt, I said, re-rolling my eyes, and then I walked out to the porch. Buffy and Scott were married a year later. I was still single. In fact, I spent most of 1999 focusing on performing poetry. I didn't meet anyone online, I didn't call or see Tommy. I did, however, stop doing my summer job at Camp Davis and picked up a new part-time job to help supplement my income. At some point during the 15th century, a bunch of European artists thought it would be a good idea to start a movement. Donatello sculpted saints, Michelangelo sculpted naked adolescents and painted God on ceilings. Raphael obsessed over the Virgin Mother, Leonardo chronicled Jesus' dining habits. 5 centuries later, we celebrate their influence by paying absurd amounts of money to dress up in outdated clothes and talk in pidgin Middle English. If we're too poor to afford that, we rent Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle DVDs. I always imagined that the Renaissance was a fictional era created just for the purpose of pissing me off. I attended a small, private middle school where we spent several weeks of our mandatory Latin class discussing various Renaissance artists. My attempts to point out that Latin was spoken primarily BCE and not 16 centuries later were ignored. The following year, I returned to public school where our art teacher obsessed over the human versions of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. When confronted with the fact that there were other art movements throughout the course of history, she was often heard saying,
Andy Warhol?
Or,
I think I've heard of Norman Rockwell. Didn't he have something to do with Stonehenge?
After a year of the underfunded, overdrugged public school, I went to Torpor Heights, where my humanities teacher spent the first 2 months going over, you guessed it, medieval history. When I was at Sulphur City College, I made sure to avoid any class that mentioned the peasanty time period. Why, then? When I was free from the shackles of enforced American education, did I take a job selling fudge at a bloody Renaissance fair? Was I trying to match my poverty to a time period? Whatever the reason, after just a few weeks, I had developed an intense hatred for these, thous, and sheep-fucking jokes. My boss was a candy store owner in Provincetown who wanted to expand business, but really didn't want to work at a Renaissance fair. He was also the man who owned the car Buffy had been driving when I'd backed into her. He hired me as a manager and sent his least favorite employee, a nearly brain-dead oaf named Brent, to show me how to make fudge and, presumably, to help me sell it. I made it 2 weeks before I told my boss I couldn't work with Brent and needed someone more motivated to work with me. And as luck would have it, the Blockbuster Saint worked at had recently closed down and he needed a job. I had just finished training him on the finer points of not killing fat children who tried to steal lollipops when he told me he got me a job licking dog shit off asphalt or some other job that had slightly more dignity than Renaissance Fair fudge cutter. Dude, I thought you were going to help me manage this stupid thing so I could take some time off.
Sorry, he said, but this new job, it's a great business opportunity. Nobody there has ever stolen my keys, put it in their cleavage, and asked me to remove it with their teeth.
I thought you liked women's cleavage, I said. Are you gay now? This didn't succeed in convincing him to stay. I spent the next day working with Brent, trying to estimate how many times he'd been dropped on his head as a child. I racked my brains trying to think of who I knew that had low enough standards but high enough work ethic to hire as a replacement saint. No one. This was during the great unemployed cute boy drought of 1999. That night, I decided to join the fair monkeys at a local bar, As much as I dreaded being surrounded by people who refused to change out of their personas in public, I liked the fact that they often bought me drinks. I was on my third Midori Sour when Erin approached me.
"Hey," she said, "what happened to your sidekick?"
"You mean Saint? He quit yesterday in order to take a job as an elephant gynecologist." She looked understandably perplexed.
"Oh, is he a vet or something?"
"No, he just likes sticking his head into gigantic vaginas."
"I see,"
she said in a tone that indicated that she did not see.
"So, are you looking to replace him?"
"Yeah, do you know someone looking for a job?" I asked, trying unsuccessfully to restrain my glee. It turned out that Erin wanted to quit her job at the face painting booth, but didn't want to quit the fair. Score! I told her she could start working with me as soon as she was ready. She showed up the next day. I gave her the intense how to resist the urge to throw the fudge-cutting knife at no-teeth-having women who complain about the size of the fudge training, and watched her interact with the rabble. She was great. She had a short temper that she accented with a sharp wit, and she knew how to smile while threatening to disembowel you. If she was a boy, I'd have been in love. At the end of the second day, she offered to help me throw the tarp over the booth and drive the unsold fudge back to my house, which was about a 45-minute drive. "Are you sure?" I asked.
"Yeah."
I packed each of our cars with fudge pans and was about ready to take off when I noticed her pink triangle on the bumper. I couldn't say I was overly shocked. She was a tiny, buzz-cutted, sassy chick with a weird voice who played Annie DeFranco CDs while we set up in the morning. She smirked when she noticed me noticing her bumper sticker.
"Yeah, I'm gay."
"Cool, I figured," I said.
"And it doesn't bother you?"
"Why would your sexuality bother me? It doesn't affect how well you cut fudge," I said. "Dykes cut fudge as well as straight boys."
"Dykes?"
"Uh-oh. I didn't mean it as an insult. I'm gay. I'm allowed." There. Now we were on equal ground. We were out to each other, and...
"You think I'm a girl?"
I'm sorry. I asked, "Are you transgender?"
"No. I'm a boy."
"Boy like with an I?" I asked.
"No,"
he said.
"Boy, like, with a penis?"
"Erin. Erin. Short hair. Not boyish. Boy face. Oh, wow, I'm really sorry. I thought
you hired me because you were trying to get in my pants," he said.
"No, I... You know I was gay?" He smirked at me.
"Yeah, I saw the way you looked at Sane, and the only reason anyone would hire that meathead Brent is if they thought he was cute."
To be fair, I hired Brent because my boss made me. I've never had a thing for cute, dumb guys. That statement may come back to haunt me later. But I'd hired Erin because I needed another employee. I'd even hired someone who I thought was a woman. I tried to think of some way to gracefully turn the tide of this conversation, but... not a single word came to mind. See, I can only fit 10.5 inches in my mouth when I've taken my socks off first. I have no idea how much I can take in the ass because no one has made an attempt to kick it since I was in junior high. While I think Erin would have been entitled to pull my foot out of my mouth and insert it up my own ass, I believe he had other plans for that particular orifice.
"We should... maybe continue this conversation at your house," he said, "with alcohol."
"Yeah," I said, "lots and lots of alcohol." I wasn't sure there was an actual volume of alcohol that can be drunk to erase the memory of gender identity confusion, but I planned on heavily researching that conundrum as soon as we got to my house.
"Nice place,"
he said when we put the last shower-capped pan of fudge on my kitchen counter.
beer in the fridge?
Yes.
Where? All I see is hard lemonade, cider, and Zima. Are you sure you're not a girl?
There's Guinness in there somewhere. I reached in and started moving around the various to-go boxes and cherry Coke cans that filled the lower two shelves, and there we are, one penis pressed firmly against my hello.
Just wanted you to know that it was there.
I don't remember anyone being remotely as forward with me as Aaron was being. I was equal parts turned on and horrified. He reached over me towards one of the widget cans on the top shelf. You don't want one of those. Let me get you a bottle.
I prefer the cans, if you don't mind.
No, they've been there since... They've been in there for a long time. The bottles are fresh. He backed away from me.
Oh, okay.
A Guinness for him, a pumpkinhead ale for me, and we were good to go. I went into the living room and sat on Elvis's favorite beanbag chair. I was not terribly surprised when, instead of sitting on the couch or the other chair, Aaron straddled my lap.
Comfy?
He asked. I was decidedly not, but it was the type of uncomfortability that I was growing accustomed to.
So, how many years have you been working at the fair now?
A month and a half, I said.
And all this time, you thought I was a woman?
Truth be told, I hadn't thought of Aaron at all until he approached me about working for us. I'd taken the blank slate approach to working at the Renaissance Fair. I stayed in my little booth and did not very exciting, fudge-centric things while the fair moved flamboyantly around me. I hadn't learned the name of a single person who didn't work in my booth. Well, I said, to be fair, until last night I'd only seen you from a distance.
So, you weren't interested in me at all. You were too busy drooling over Brent and Saint, I guess.
Brent drools enough on his own. He doesn't need me helping him, and Saint is straight. I didn't notice you because I'm incredibly... He kissed me. Like a girl. His face was soft, like he'd just come from swimming in an ocean of aloe and vera.
You're a pretty good kisser for a first-timer.
First-timer? I asked.
Have you ever kissed a guy before?
His gaydar may have been finely tuned, but his promiscuity dar was apparently on the fritz. One or two, I said, dozen.
Anyone else from the fair?
No, I said. Are there a lot of gay guys working there?
Well, most are trendy bi, at least.
Like who? I asked.
Both nut boys, one of the mud men, the village drunk, three of the wax workers, three of the fudge men, one blacksmith, the jeweler, two of the leather and chainmail salesmen, the entire staff of the costume booth, and the Red Knight. The court jester and one of the guys at the fried dough booth, the other mud man, and about half a dozen of the actors are straight up gay.
Jesus! Is there any guy at the fair that you haven't fucked? I asked incredulously, whether I was incredulous at the volume of people he had slept with, the shittiness of my gaydar, or the hypocrisy of me being shocked by someone else's promiscuity. I'll let you decide. He shook his head and laughed at me.
I didn't fuck all of them. I just know they're gay or bisexual. I've only slept with...
He began counting on his fingers.
Most of them.
Wait a second, I said. You said three of the fudge men.
Yeah.
Look, I know Saint shows up on gaydar, but I'm reasonably certain he is not even bi. You haven't...
Well,
he said.
I think he's at least bi, but I was talking about Brent.
Brent's bi? I asked.
Yeah,
he said.
We work together at the hardware store during the off season. Everyone there calls him Juice.
Why? I asked.
Because when he gets drunk, he takes guys home and asks them if they'll juice themselves on him. You know, come.
Thanks. I got it, I said, and I wanted to give it back. Brent was fairly cute when he wasn't speaking or otherwise making a fool of himself, but I did not want to think of him spread-eagled on a floor somewhere, asking people to jerk off to him.
I take it you don't want to invite him over for a threesome.
Just as well.
I'd rather have you all to myself.
I've got my left hand on the edge of the bed, my right hand on the small of his back, my lower body is in the altar boy giving, bless me, Father, for I have sinned, head position, and after 6 positions in about 20 minutes after a full day of work serving dead cattle to zombie tourists, I'm not just fucking adjective form tired, I am fucking verb present tense tired. Even though neither of us have come yet, I'm thinking of grabbing my briefs off the floor and waving them like a flag. Then Aaron starts bucking against me, and we're done.
Shit,
he said, stretching towards Mecca.
Are you as wiped as I am?
Yeah, was all I could really manage to say. It was 4 days since I hired Aaron, 3 since I realized he was in fact Aaron. In these 3 days, he'd spent a great deal of time in my bedroom.
Do you have to work again tomorrow?
Yeah, but I'm the first one in, so I should get cut early, I said.
What time should I come over?
Are you leaving? I asked. He had this habit of taking off directly after sex, which was okay by me. I didn't mind being a booty call. Hadn't had anything even remotely close to a boyfriend since Elvis, and even though it had been over a year, I wasn't sure I was ready. Add to this the fact that I still had an enormous crush on Saint, and things like that always work out for the best, trust me. And the employee with benefits package fit my needs perfectly.
Do you want me to stay?
I did, but I never told him as much. And when the fair ended for the season, I made it a point to call him once a week for 3 weeks. When I stopped calling him or returning his calls. Randy lived up to his name. While I was working at Kookaburra Canyon in Cranberry Lake, it was my job to train new employees. Randy was finishing up his menu test when I came in. While I graded his test, he kept looking at me oddly. I initially thought he was maybe coming on to me. When I told him he passed, he said,
Is your name Adam?
You can guess my answer.
Oh, wow, you used to be a counselor at the camp I went to. Do you remember me?
I didn't.
I was a kid who jumped off the boathouse and sprained my ankle.
Now I remembered he was the stupid kid. He wasn't one of mine. I had been 16 at the time, and working with the 8 to 10-year-olds, Randy had been 14. We spent that night working and reminiscing, and at the end of the shift, for no apparent reason, he leapt on my back much the way the kids had when I worked at camp. Of course, the kids weighed about 50 pounds, and Randy weighed a 180. Had I been prepared, I would have lifted him easily. As it was, I nearly fell face first into a table. Sorry about that. After his first Friday night shift, Randy needed a ride home. He started talking about a girl he was casually seeing and how she liked to do E and let him fuck her. He was quite the charming conversationalist.
When she's feeling frisky, she throws on a strap-on and fucks me up the ass.
I pulled over to the side of the road. Bullshit. Why would you tell me something like that?
I don't know. Maybe I'm hoping you'll take me back to your place and fuck me.
Who says this shit? Randy.
I'm sure it was meant as a joke. Still, I pulled a Yui. Where are we going? My place. I got a hard-on and a refrigerator full of beer. I am absolutely positive this was not meant as a joke. Randy was tall, blonde, and cut like a Bellamy porn star. He wanted more than anything in life to be a Navy SEAL. I could never date anyone like him, but I could get him drunk and fuck him. Though I didn't imagine things would go as planned. I figured we'd get drunk and pass out, have some really cool conversation that didn't involve either of us getting naked. We didn't even make it to the refrigerator before he started taking his clothes off. I have a few rules, he said. Okay. Tell no one. Seriously, I'm not gay, I'm just really turned on right now. Whatever. There was nearly no foreplay. A bit of fingering to prep him, naturally, but no kissing or anything. Just him bent over the arm of the couch, upside down in the middle of the living room floor, laid down on the chaise lounge on my back porch. We fucked everywhere that night, and the next night, and a week later. By then, we were making out first, caressing each other like lovers, or at least very close friends. The fourth night was so amazing. We knocked over and broke my computer monitor, and I didn't care. That time, he spent the night playing with my hair, nibbling on my ears. I knew that this was going to be my first real post-Elvis relationship. I sensed the coming of an overwhelming happiness. Hence, I don't work for the Psychic Friends Network. Randy didn't show up for work the next day or ever again. A few weeks later, a mutual friend told me that he'd run into Randy at the mall buying clothes for his move to Florida. Having no idea that Randy and I were anything more than acquaintances, he was quite surprised that Randy asked how I was and told him to pass along the message that he was very sorry to move away without saying goodbye.
Randy, if they knew, I think they'd take me away. Just for loving you, you, all alone in my own quiet way. 'Cause that's the way that I want it. Wish I could see you now, you and your cherry black eyes. My heart would never lie down, down, 'cause that's the way that my arrow flies, and that's the way that I want it.
You have been listening to the In Safe Mode Journals, All My Exes Live in Sex Flicks, The Loop, Part 1, Fair is Fair. This episode was brought to you by intro music for this episode was the commercial theme for the Toys R Us toy store chain, I'm a Toys R Us Kid. Incidental music included Renaissance Fair by The Birds, Pink Triangle by Weezer, Tired of Sex, also by Weezer. The American Dial Tone, brought to you probably originally by Ma Bell, but now brought to you by Anytime You Pick Up a Phone Before You Press a Number. And the outro music playing now is Randy by Cat Stevens. For more information on this podcast or any of my other writing, you should check out www.crookedtreehouse.com. www.crookedtreehouse.com. www.crookedtreehouse.com, or you could email me at insafemode@gmail.com. You know, the character from 30 Rock?